two black eyes," he laughed mockingly. The plane lurched so badly all four of them clutched their seat arms. "I'll look great for the photographers," Harry thought. "If we land okay. If we don't go into the drink and drown." "Got Misawa's beam," O'Banion reported. Colonel Christopher answered, "Great, pipe it to me." She heard the thin, scratchy tone of the airfield's radio location beam. "We can ride in on it," Karen thought. "Even if the weather's 0-0 at the field, we can home in on the beam." "Getting nasty," Kaufman said, his voice high, nervous. "Yeah." They were in the storm now, bouncing and lurching in the turbulence of the thick black clouds. Lightning flashed every few seconds. "Hold together, baby," Karen crooned silently to the plane. "Just a little bit longer. Hold together and we'll get home. Just a little bit longer." "What's the ceiling at Misawa, John?" she asked into her lip mic.
"Checking," Lieutenant Sharman answered. Then, 800 and lowering. Raining hard.
"Obi, get Misawa traffic control and tell them to clear a runway for us."
"Already did that, Colonel."
"Good. We'll make it," she told herself. "But we've only got one shot at it. In the condition this bird is in, we won't be able to go around and try a second approach if we goof the first one. I've got to make it on the first approach. Got to."
Missoula Community Hospital, Montana.
Charlie Ingersoll knew it was bad news when three doctors came into his room with a clerical collared minister accompanying them. They all looked like they were going to a funeral. "Martha?" Charlie asked before any of them could open their mouths.
"My kids?"
"They're fine," said the oldest of the doctors.
"Really?"
"Really. They're right here in this hospital, being treated for exposure. But they'll be released later today and they'll come to see you."
Charlie was sitting up in bed. One of the IV drips had been removed from his arm, but the other one was still connected. Charlie had tried to figure out which of his toes they'd taken off, but he couldn't tell by wiggling, and the bedclothes covered both his bandaged feet. Suddenly, all the breath seemed to gush out of Charlie, as if he'd been holding it in for a year and suddenly it all whooshed out of him. He felt lightheaded, like he was drunk or high or something.
"You saved their lives, Mr. Ingersoll," said one of the younger doctors. He didn't look happy about it, though.
"They're okay," Charlie said, his voice shaking. "That's the important thing."
"The same snowplow that found you picked up your family a little further up the road," said the older doctor. "You were semi-delirious, but you kept telling the driver that your family was stuck in a snowbank."
"You saved them," the other younger doctor said almost in a whisper.
"Then everything's okay," Charlie said, hoping it was true.
"Well," said the older doctor, "almost everything is okay."
"What do you mean?"
Looking very unhappy, the doctor explained, "We did some routine tests on the blood samples you gave us."
"Gave you?" Charlie snapped. "I didn't give you no blood samples."
"You were unconscious when you were brought in. We took blood samples as a matter of course, strictly routine."
"So?"
Glancing at his two younger colleagues, the doctor said, "The routine screening we did indicates that you have, cancer."
"Cancer?" Charlie yelped. "Me?"
"Prostate cancer." Charlie sat there gaping at them.
"It's apparently in the early stage," said one of the younger medics. "It's definitely treatable."
Charlie had heard about prostate cancer. They cut it out of